Hey everyone, before we get into the show, just a quick note that this is episode 354. I do say 353. I apologize for that, but it is still a fantastic episode. Thank you so much for listening, and I hope you enjoy it. Hello, welcome back to the FitCast. This is episode number 353. My name is Kevin Larrabee, and I'm very happy to have back on the show, really my boss, I guess, Mike Boyle. Mike, how you doing?
I'm doing great, Kevin. How are you?
I'm doing good, and I just sort of realized this week that it has been a long time since I've had you back on the show. It's one of the unfortunate things about seeing you so much at the facility. I kind of forget that, you know, I don't get to share all this information with all the people on the show as well.
It's funny. I don't know when the last time I was on was. I'm almost the opposite. I feel like it wasn't that long ago, but I don't know when it was. So I would say you're probably right because it's amazing to me. I just was looking at some emails today that were actually from February that I hadn't really taken care of yet. And I said, okay, I should probably get on these.
Well, let's get right into it because we have a ton of stuff from the Facebook audience. You guys really stepped it up this time and submitted a ton of questions, which is really fantastic. Thank you for that. But I think the first thing I want to start off with is really since we're getting to the end of the summer, I think it's always good to do a little bit of a recap of how the summer went at MBSC because that's really the testing grounds of anything that we change in the program, and you get to see so many bodies go through that facility and go through the program. What were your thoughts on how the summer went?
I thought the summer was – I always feel this way, or I'm lucky, I guess, that I do feel this way in terms of – I always feel like it was the best summer that we've had because I feel like our coaching staff continues to just get better and better and better every year because our full-time people that are there have been there longer, and I think – we do a better job developing our part-time people kind of through the internship process and then bringing part-time people back to be summer help. And so I just thought this year was really, really good and really smooth and things. I always look at it and think, do you have those, for lack of a better term, those oh shit moments where you realize, wow, things have gotten a little out of control here or it's too busy or the coaching isn't what I want it to be, because the problem with us is with the volume of business that we're doing, it really is impossible to be perfect all the time. It's just not realistic. But I felt like this summer, I never had that moment where I looked and thought, wow, actually, no, I won't say that. Twice I did look and think, okay, we're too crowded. We've got backed up against each other a little bit, but I think we were able to smooth our way through that. And I feel like the biggest problem that we have now is it's amazing that we can get busy and think, wow, you know, we need to do a better job of moving people through the facility. But on the whole, I think that happened really twice where we had to sit down and sort of, okay, let's make sure we smooth this out and get people to be conscious of time and space and all that stuff.
How about in terms of the programming? Obviously, focusing more on the athlete side of things, we have a lot of adults going in there too. But on the programming side, are there any things that stand out where going into the fall, you're thinking we might want to just take that stuff out or maybe put something else in?
The one thing that, and this is what we're going to talk about next Tuesday in our staff meeting too, so the Body by Boyle Online people will see this probably in greater detail, but I think we may be at the point where certain people where we've exhausted the usefulness of split squats and rear foot elevated split squats in the sense that the loads are just getting too heavy and the technique is getting too compromised. And because I know for our Olympic girls, we're actually going to move to a real one leg squat test. And I don't know if you've seen, Devin McConnell's had a couple clips up of his guys at Lowell one leg squatting. I think one guy did 200 pounds for three.
It's amazing.
Yeah, it is amazing. And I think, so I kind of look at that and think, that's an area we really need to explore. And we just got an 80-pound weight vest in from Perform Better today or yesterday. Which is, I mean, ridiculous.
Is that the Ben Bruno? Is that what they're just calling
it? Yeah, it should be called the Ben Bruno in the catalog, but it is not. It's actually camo model, and the weights that are in it look like – they literally look like these lead sinkers that you'd use for fishing. And it's ridiculous in terms of it would absolutely take two people to get on. But – so I think – And it'd be interesting. I would start to think, how long does it take Devin's guys to get suited up for that squat? Because you're talking about getting a lot of load strapped on you to be able to do what they do. So that's the one thing that I look at and think may need some re-examination, because I think for a while we've really run with that and it's been good. And I still think it's good for the vast majority, but I think our stronger hockey kids, when we start looking, the kids that are up into the hundreds, 110s, 120s, mm-hmm. it's almost unavoidable that that becomes a little bit of a two-leg exercise. I always say it becomes almost like a scissors posture kind of thing, where somebody's pulling with their back leg as hard as they're pushing with their front leg, even though you're telling them not to. And I think when you get to that real true one-leg squat, it's a one-leg squat. There's no way around that exercise. So that may be the next generation. And in some ways, I think Devin, you know, I like to see the MBSC guys kind of leading the pack a little bit and doing some stuff that I would think is really sort of innovative and forward thinking. And he's clearly doing that.
Would you ever consider going with any other like barbell loading again? I know we messed around with that a little bit in the past and then threw it out.
Yeah, I don't think the loading pattern changes it as much. I just think that it really becomes a teaching thing. And we've taught, you and I have talked about this a lot. I think sometimes increasing the range of motion, elevating the front foot, decreasing the weight, there's a lot of things that we can do to make it be – because what that exercise should be is a one-leg squat balance.
Right.
You get a little outrigger. I said it's like the outrigger on a canoe. That back foot should be there to keep you from tipping. But what happens is as the load gets greater and greater – you're losing it a piece at a time, a percentage at a time, 5% at a time, whatever it is. But suddenly when you start seeing these kids with really heavy loads, it's not – yeah, you know, it's the telephone game. Mm-hmm. I tell you, you tell the next person. You know, by the time you get sometimes to that spot, it's not the way you want it to look. And I think at some point that means, hey, maybe that lift for that person has run its course. I know, and we felt the same way when we tested our Olympic girls out in Colorado Springs this year. That's how I felt in terms of – and I mean, they moved some weight. We had, you know, I think the heaviest kettlebells they had were 32s, but they had 32-kilo kettlebells with two weight vests on, and girls were banging out 10 reps. Mm-hmm. But I felt like, okay, you know, you're kind of looking and thinking, yeah, there's probably too much back leg going on in that to really be what you want it to be. So we could talk about this forever, but – it's that to me is the one thing that stands out.
Right. Like you said, if you're a Body by Boyle online member, you guys can tune in next week and literally kind of go through that discussion with us on the fly. So I kind of want to get this stuff out of the way, because we got a couple questions because we're doing the certified functional strength coach stuff. People just wanting to know your thoughts on the state of certifications in general, and we're going to go two ways with this. Let's start talking about the possible regulation of this stuff with a story that came out on T Nation. Mark Ripito had a great article talking about this, titled "Big Brother is Watching Your Squat." That's a great little catch line there for him. But obviously, people are going to be coming to you asking what your thoughts are on this. So I want to know, what do you think? Is this something that could actually possibly happen? Do we need to be worried about this?
I think you need to be worried about it. Absolutely. I really do, because I think there is always that fear that the government's going to get in the way and the government's going to try to regulate. And all of a sudden, yeah, Big Brother is going to be watching your squad. As much as I'm not a Ripito fan, it is a possibility, because when you think and somebody – there was another article that I wrote that I read, and you realize that they're regulating an awful lot of stuff. They're regulating hairdressers. They're regulating all kinds of people. So why would they not choose to regulate us as strength and conditioning professionals? And so I think, yes, we need to be really conscious, because, again, when you think would the – NSCA not like that? Would some of these bigger groups, because I think the one thing that we don't have, and we've talked about this, there is this NCSA, National Certification something, that basically certifies certifications, which mm-hmm. to me is a bizarre redundancy, but it's reality. And so you start looking at this and realizing that it's a power play, it's a money play for the bigger players, in the sense that if we can get, not we meaning you and I, but if you're, say, NASM or ACE or any NSCA or any of these, if you can get it so that people have to be certified and you're one of the ones that they have to take, that's a huge benefit for you. And it's a huge reason why big companies love government regulation, because suddenly the government can come along and say, you had to be certified and you have to be certified by these people. So yeah, I think that's a huge issue that we've got to be really conscious of. And that some people think, oh, that could never happen. It will happen if somebody in government suddenly takes an interest in this and realizes, hey, we'd like to see this happen for whatever reason. And usually, in all honesty, it's always about money. Mm-hmm. And that's the sad part about the political environment, is that it's always, always, always about money. It's not about safety. It's not about strength and conditioning or personal training or making it safer. It's about somebody pushing their agenda because they want to make more money.
And I think this is a discussion that has been happening for years, that we kind of want some standard, some quality standard out there, because we're in a situation where people can still go to a website right now and in 24 hours they can be a personal trainer. They can have a certificate that says they are certified to now help people move and, you know, work with their nutrition and all that stuff. But this seems to be the worst way it could possibly go.
Right, and exactly. And that's the problem that you get into, is that you look at this and think, yes, this could be a really good idea. And then you look at it and think, oh, this could be a really bad idea, because we're worried about people becoming a personal trainer in a weekend with some fly-by-night certification. Mm-hmm. But somebody else is worrying about it from the standpoint of, hey, I can make a shitload of money off this thing. Right. Because if I become one of these – and in reality, that's one of the reasons I've said to you, I do want to pursue this NCSA thing, because I want to be ready. I would like to be one. If it gets forced on us, mm-hmm. then I'd like to be in position to be able to continue to move forward and not all of a sudden realize, hey, wow, we're out of luck.
Right.
And the truth is, you know, we could very well be out of luck. Mm-hmm. So it's the classic double-edged sword kind of thing.
Well, let's talk a little bit about what we're doing, and we're going to – obviously, we have a lot of other stuff to talk about, but I think since it's related, we got some questions for people just asking about what the first year of Certified Functional Strength Coach has been like. And Mike, you're just at a couple of the events. We just did a bunch at the Perform Better Summits in Providence, Chicago, and Long Beach, and you got to kind of – see firsthand what people's experiences are and get some feedback at the socials and right afterwards and stuff like that. And we're clearly biased, but you pretty much don't pull any punches. What are your thoughts on how things have been going?
I mean, we're clearly biased, but it's been really good. I mean, you know, and I think you know this because you're involved, and I know this because I'm involved, but we have had nothing but, wow, that was an unbelievable experience. Best continuing education. Yeah, they can go on our website and read all that stuff. People have said things like, this is the best continuing education money I have ever spent. Mm-hmm. So I look at that and think, that's a pretty darn good endorsement, because obviously most of these people that are spending this continuing education money are, in fact, they've been doing it. They've spent a lot of continuing education money. They've right. done a lot of courses. So when you look at that, I think we're up over 500. I know that. And we're probably approaching 600 people.
We're over 600 now.
Okay. So we're over 600. And I don't think that we've had one negative response out of 600 people in terms of that wasn't good.
We got one response asking for snacks. Okay. I'm dead serious. Like, that was the piece of negative feedback, is like, I wish you guys had like protein bars or granola bars, because you're, you know, at these practicals, you're moving pretty much nonstop for 8 hours, which makes sense.
Right. And, you know, we're looking at that and realizing, hey, that's the only negative thing that we've heard, is that, hey, I wish we had more food. Okay. We can work on that.
Totally. Yeah.
But the reality is that we've really, I think we've done something really good. And as you said, am I biased? Absolutely, I'm biased. Without a doubt, I'm biased. It's our information. It's our certification program. But the good thing about that is we're not hiding anything, and we have not had any negative feedback. People love it.
Well, I think this was our answer to that problem that is now trying to be solved with, you know, government regulation of making sure there is a standard for personal trainers and strength coaches, and not to do the whole, you know, the selling pitch, but everyone that does get certified with the CFSC, they have to go through a live practical event, and they need to pass a practical exam to make sure that they can move well, that they can give clear, concise, effective coaching cues, and then they understand a system of progressions and regressions, or just really a systemized approach, so they're not throwing stuff down on a piece of paper when like 5 minutes before the client shows up, which, you know, I'm sure a lot of people out there have had that trainer, or they've seen that situation in gyms and clubs and things like that. And, you know, I really just recommend it. If you are in the industry or you're looking to get some more education, go to certifiedfsc.com and check it out. We have a couple events coming up for the fall right now. We don't do a ton of events because we're literally five people and with the help of our coaches at MBSC as well. But we're not a gigantic organization. It's not, I tell people this a lot, and, you know, Mike, I apologize when I say this, but we're not super great at making money and like maximizing profits and stuff like that. Like, that's not our goal, is to become millionaires with this. And if you've seen the passion of, you know, myself, Mike, Brendan, Kevin Carr, and the rest of our coaches at these events, like, you can tell we just love spreading this information, helping make a positive effect in this industry, and hopefully rise in the quality of all the, you know, training that is going out there today. And, you know, 600 people are pretty happy so far, and hopefully you check out everything else we got coming up. But yeah, just like, I like to mention that and to get that stuff out of the way now, because I don't want to turn this into a sales pitch thing. We got a ton of great questions from people on Facebook. So, along with the Perform Better Summits, Mike, I know you got to check out a couple talks at those events. Was there anything that stood out to you? Anything that made you think or, you know, take some notes?
Well, I liked Bush Nextator's talk, although I didn't like his plyometric talk at the summit as much as I liked his talk at BSMPG. But I just like listening to him. I love listening to real coaches. I really enjoy that. I think I hate to say it, there's a lot of phonies out there who don't have a lot of experience and who have basically BS'd their way into positions sometimes where they get to speak, not necessarily to Perform Better events, because I think Chris does a pretty good job of screening it out. But so I love listening to a guy with 30 years of actual coaching under his belt, because he says, and somebody said to me when I said knowledge bombs, they're like, don't use that term. And I said, but they really were. And sometimes when he was at BSMPG, I almost wanted to stand up a couple times in the talk and stop him and be like, okay, was everybody listening? Did you hear that? Because he's a very kind of southern, down-home guy. He's from Louisiana, very low-key. And sometimes he could say something really brilliant and it'll go right by you, because he wasn't sort of jumping up and down and stamping his feet. And you really have to pay attention with those guys. But so I thought he was really good. I listened to Don Saldino's from Drive 495, and I liked his, because again, I think it was real world talk from a guy who has developed a business in a really difficult market. Mm-hmm. And I thought that was really interesting. And the funny thing, like, Don got me interested in going to see Mark Fisher Fitness and going and seeing their operation, because Don talked about how well they were doing and the amount of revenue they were generating and, you know, and the amount of square feet that they have. And, mm-hmm. And I think – so I'm always interested in the business side. I'm always interested in the training side. I love listening in. I love talking to people. I listened to McGill, which I always enjoy. I listened to Greg Rose, which I always enjoy. And so I just think there's – the one good thing – and anybody who complains about the Perform Better Summit is an idiot, because there is so much opportunity both in the room and out of the room to have great conversation with people and to get great information, both – you know, about the business side of the business and about the training side of the business from some really smart people who really get it. That, you know, and again, I, as you said, I don't make any money off the Perform Better Summits, but it's one of those things where, you know, I go and I still, I'm 30 whatever years into this, and I'm still sitting in talks and I'm still writing stuff down and I'm still taking notes. Most of the notes that I write apply to us, which I think is, I think that's the stuff that when people make me think and I think, okay, we have to do this better in our middle school program, or we have to do this better, or we have to do this better with our high school kids, or we have to do this better with our elite kids, or whatever it is. So it's all good, and it always, I think anything that makes you think is awesome.
Well, it took me 3 summits this year to see all the talks that I wanted to see. And that's a great problem to have because they have 4 things going on for every block. So you have 4 choices every hour and a half or so. And if you haven't checked those out, make sure you start looking at the calendar for next summer, because those are the must-see events of the year. And there's just everyone is at those events. So it's, like Mike said, not just the talks inside the rooms, but it's out in the hall getting to, you know, talk to Ben Bruno, who I haven't seen since last year, and getting to see all these great people that show up at these events for, I don't even want to call it like just connecting, but just brainstorming and just sitting down and getting lunch with these people that you can share ideas with.
You're right. I mean, I had lunches and breakfast scheduled for almost every single day of every single summit with somebody where I sat down. You know, I had dinner with Mark Verstegen, which was great. I don't get to catch up with him often. You know, I had coffee with Ben Bruno at lunch during one of them. Same thing as you did. I just I was trying to get as many opportunities as I could, like you said, to reconnect with people that have been through the mentorship, or to be around people that I've worked with. It's just it is. You really can't beat it.
Yeah, I did get to get some ice cream with Max Schenck and Brendan Rurick. That was a good time. And Mike, Max wanted to have me let you know that he's waiting on his residuals for all the uses of his videos and his talk. So I gotta mention that.
You have to tell him that I've made him famous.
That's what I kept telling him.
I'm like, come on, Max. Everybody in the world knows that you're the strongest unilateral person, pound for pound. You and Ben Bruno are legendary because of me. I think actually, he might have to start sending me some free stuff.
Yeah, well, hopefully he'll listen to this and he'll get some stuff in the mail. Along with all this, and I actually ended up talking to Nick Winkelman about this last week on the show, because we were looking at the summit and how almost more focused that is getting to like physical therapy side of things, and how those talks are the ones that are becoming a little bit more popular. Those are the rooms that are getting more filled, and the potential worry that we should have with people that are getting a little bit outside their scope of practice. I was wondering, what are your thoughts on that? That, you know, just the talks in general seem to be going a little bit more towards the PT side of things. And if strength coaches or personal trainers, if they should be getting involved in that stuff, is that outside their scope of practice?
I think you probably know the answer with this, but you feed me the question anyway. I don't think so at all. And I've said this over and over again. I think that we're the best medical professionals in the world. Mm-hmm. And I think we can really help people. And I think that people trying to learn more about how to help somebody is really positive. I think the biggest impacts that have been made on me over the last decade have been guys like Mike Clark and Greg Cook and Greg Rose and all these guys who are, you know, Charlie Weingraf, guys who are not strength and conditioning coaches by trade. Greg Rose is a chiropractor. Greg Cook is a physical therapist. Stuart McGill is basically a biomechanist. So if you think about all of these people, and because what you need to do is sit there and figure out, okay, what can I do? What can I do safely? What can I do that's not going to hurt somebody? I think the thing that goes too far, the Kelly Starrett stuff goes too far. The mashing and smashing and just randomly mobilizing joints and people not knowing which way to pull things with bands. I think that's where people can get more out of scope of practice. But I think sitting in a seminar and listening, whether it's listening to Michael Mullen talk about PRI, or whether it's listening to Gray talk, or it's listening to Greg Rose talk about 4x4 matrix, or listening to Charlie talk, I think that's really, really good for the profession. And yes, will people go off the reservation and do something stupid? Yeah, maybe. But I think it's just as stupid as putting 500 pounds on somebody's back, or asking them to do a kipping pull-up, or asking them to do burpees till they puke. Do you know what I mean? So I don't think – okay, let's, you know, like almost like we should stay to this sort of simple, basic core of exercises. Let's just do squats, deadlifts, cleans, bench press. Let's go back to the old days. And somehow that's going to be better for people versus thinking about something like postural restoration and asking, is there effective handedness over a period of 30 years? Mm-hmm. So I think personally that it's really, really good for the field. I think we've got to be careful, but I think we always have to be careful. I'd rather look at it and think, hey, somebody's getting too weird and too functional than somebody's getting too heavy, to be honest, because I think there's a lot greater chance to get hurt from huge loads than there is to get hurt from somebody, you know, trying to know too much about rehab or therapy.
Yeah, and it's for me, I understand both sides of this whole discussion, but for me, it's been a case of now I just have a better idea of what to look out for. And they like you said, Mike Mullen has given me so many things that I can now look for in movement patterns and, you know, making use of breathing and stuff like that. And it just has opened up. It's made the view a lot wider, so I can have a better view of how people are moving.
Yeah, and that's, I mean, I think when you look at that, it's hard to look at that and see where that could be wrong.
Right.
And that's what I guess. And I think people get scared, mm-hmm. but I wonder sometimes what they're scared of.
Yeah, it's like I'm not.
It's
kind
of like the scope of practice. Yeah, the scope of practice thing is boogeyman in my mind. Mm. Obviously, should you be trying to take your hands and move somebody's joints? No, but beyond that, I don't know. I mean, should you be trying to figure out how to use exercise more effectively to positively impact somebody's well-being? Yeah, absolutely you should. Why not? And if you're doing PRI stuff, who cares? Again, you're not putting your hands on people.
Right.
And even then, I still think that to some degree, even putting your hands on people, I think is not the end of the world by any stretch of the imagination. Mm-hmm. But again, I know we have, you know, and it's funny, you know, you look at it and think, well, what's the difference in terms of, you know, if you're stretching somebody, is that a bad thing? I mean, I don't know. I don't think so. As I said, I think that the time when you could get yourself in trouble is when you set out to move a joint. I think that's where we can look at this and say, maybe something has gone wrong here. But beyond that, I don't think so.
Let's go to this question from Michael Hannaford. He wanted to know your views on limiting factors and mental handicaps that keep talented and capable athletes from showing their true potential and steps that you take on helping them overcome them.
You know, it's funny. And obviously, I think, you know, we've spent a ton of time on sort of self-help, personal growth stuff. But I think the biggest limiting factor with a lot of talented athletes is just flat out lack of work habits. Not showing up. It goes back to the slight edge idea. And so when we talked about reading the Slight Edge book, Jeff Olson said in the Slight Edge that you need to show up and you need to show up consistently. Mm-hmm. And I think sometimes the biggest thing with talented athletes is that they've been allowed either to not show up or to not show up consistently or to not put in great effort when they're there. So I think sometimes I get worried, much like monitoring. There's so many things where I think we can get the cart before the horse, and people are worried about sort of the psychological well-being of the athlete. But I think in general, there's a lot to be said for, hey, let's get there. And let's get to work. So, you know, I think we can – there's a lot of things that we could look at and say, oh, we need to do this or we need to do that. But I think a lot of those quote-unquote shortcomings could be taken care of if somebody showed up and showed up consistently.
Yeah, this is another thing I'd like to bring up with you, just because you've been doing this for so long. I've been seeing a trend in the industry towards, I almost want to call it like over positivity from coaches when it comes to like energy and just being like incredibly upbeat and positive. And like when I coach, I am upbeat and positive, but I think, you know, there's a trend these days in the industry to, I don't know how to best put this, but to be overly positive or inspirational. How do you view all that stuff as someone who's been doing this for, you know, 30 plus years?
I mean, I think there's a bunch of ways that you can look at this, but I think you need to be positive. I think you need to connect. But at the same time, I think you need to be realistic about your demands on the athlete. So mm-hmm. I think there's a lot of balance there. There's a very delicate balance in terms of looking at this and saying, yes, do you want to be positive? Yes, do you want to be energetic? But if that's at the expense of the basics, like I don't want to be positive about someone who hasn't been there for a week.
Right.
So I think that's the difference. I think you've got to be realistic and look at somebody and say, you haven't been here. You haven't put in the effort. And be honest. I think honesty comes first before being positive. I think that's going to be a big – when you're developing that relationship with that athlete, I think what you've got to do is you've got to be able to look at that athlete and say, okay, here's honestly where we are. And it's funny, obviously, a lot of my work lately – has been with the Women's Olympic ice hockey team, say over the last, 5 years. And we had a meeting with our girls in Lake Placid at our last camp. And I talked about some of the negative meetings that I had with some of our best girls. So, you know, Casey Bellamy, who's one of our best players, is going to be a 3-time Olympian. Mm-hmm. And her progress over the last 5 years has been, I mean, absurd. Like her vertical jump has gone from 19 inches to 26 inches. She's made the kind of gains that people would say, well, you can't make gains like that, particularly in your late 20s. You're not going to go from, say, you know, 22 to 27 and increase your power output by 30%. She's gained no body weight. She's exactly the same weight she was 5 years ago. She's bench pressing, you know, 135 for five. She's cleaning 135 for five. She's doing weighted chin-ups with 25 pounds. But in 2010, we had a conversation that was not very nice, where I told her she was a phenomenal underachiever and that her test results were abysmal for somebody of her ability level. You know what I mean? And I had a bunch of those meetings with a bunch of girls who now I have tremendous relationships with. But the relationship started out with honesty. With here's who you are, here's where you are. Mm-hmm. And I think there's a big difference in, you know, in say in your adult groups when you're working with young kids. When you're trying to catch fish, it's probably different. You're trying to just get somebody, okay, I want to get them hooked on this. I want to get them to realize it's good for them. But when you've got, and this is what I think the question was about, when you've got elite athletes, you got to be able to look at those elite athletes and be honest with those elite athletes and say, you're not where you need to be. We just sent out, even from my daughter's team, she's on a, you know, kind of a higher level U19 girls ice hockey team. And one of the things that we said is that the conditioning results should be proportional to the speed results. In other words, the fastest people should be the best in the conditioning test because in theory, they cover the distance the fastest. Mm-hmm. And that's the same thing we've told our Olympic girls. Do you know what I mean? And then, you know, if you're the fastest, then you should be first in the conditioning test. And some people say, well, it can't be that way. But realistically, if it's a test that relies on repeat sprint ability, it should be that way, or it should be pretty darn close to that. So I guess this is all the honest estimation of stuff, and that's what I think is much more important than I don't know. I'm a little bit old school in the sense that I don't want to boost your self-image until I've established what your self-image really is. And I think for a lot of these elite athletes, their self-image is too good. You're not worrying about boosting their self-image. What you're worried about is having them be realistic about where they really are and where they really need to go.
I think I may have asked you this question on the show before, and I know you've been asked this like at almost pretty much every seminar that I've been with you, but Stephen had a question. I'm curious just because maybe this answer has changed now that you're a couple years out from this, but he wants to know what your biggest takeaways were from your time with the Red Sox, you know, lessons learned, et cetera. because, you know, you're the strength coach there for 2 years. And now I guess it was at the end of this year, it would have been 2 years ago, would have been the wrap up of your year when they won the World Series. So has that, you know, what were your takeaways, and has anything changed in the way that you reflect on that time?
I don't think the takeaways haven't really changed. I mean, one, I have much more respect for baseball players, I think, and I think I have said this, I don't know necessarily if it was on the FitCast or not, but I think baseball players get a bad rap in terms of that they don't have great work ethic, because I don't think that's true. I think it is the most difficult professional sport to play, both from a playing standpoint, in terms of the ability to hit and the ability to pitch, extremely, extremely difficult skills that are very highly neural. It's not something you can't like gut through it, work through it. They're really difficult skills to master. And then they play 162 games in 180 days. I mean, the stress on the body is ungodly in terms of what these guys are doing with travel. And people say, oh, they just stand around. But I mean, it is not. I was there for 2 years. It's not an easy thing to do. So I think those were the things probably from a takeaway standpoint. I really fell in love with pitching, in the sense that I don't think there's any more difficult skill in sport, you know, and including hitting a golf ball and all these other things, than pitching. When you see what these great pitchers can do, it's absolutely positively magical. And I've used this quote a million times, but I talked to Josh Beckett one time and I said something about throwing strikes, and he looked at me and he was like, come on, Mike. He said, it's got nothing to do with throwing strikes. It's about throwing balls that look like strikes. And I was like, yeah, you're absolutely right. That's what you're trying to do. You're trying to tempt somebody, get somebody to swing at a ball that's going to be too low, or a ball that's going to be too high, or a ball that's going to fall, and the ability of those guys to do that. And then the reverse is that the guy's going to hit that. And you realize one of the things that baseball, when you really look at it from a statistical standpoint, is pretty amazing, in the sense that a guy who succeeds 2 times out of 10 is probably a minor league guy who's never going to make any money. A guy who succeeds 3 times out of 10 is a guy who's probably going to go to the All-Star game. Yeah, that's a pretty interesting juxtaposition when you think about sports skills. 1 time out of 10 changes you from All-Star to also-ran. Mm-hmm. And so, as I said, I could probably go on forever and just talk about baseball. And Steve would love that. But I don't know if everybody else would, but it was really enjoyable. But I have a lot of respect for baseball strength and conditioning coaches and baseball athletic trainers, because the hours are absolutely crazy.
Let's go to this question from Leonard Rooney. He wants to know what you've been consuming in terms of books or concepts, other concepts from other coaches. What has been occupying your time when it comes to education stuff?
Oh God, it never stops, really. Last couple of weeks, I've read a couple of fictional works, mm-hmm. and I've just stopped reading field related stuff. But obviously I think I've talked about Start With Why a bunch of times, and I think that was probably the last one that I finished. I've probably since ordered a couple. I'm looking at one, I'm going to think of the name, but I'm going to stand up so I can actually see it, called Hard Hat, about being a good teammate. And I'm always looking for stuff for our staff being. I started reading Raving Fans, which is another Ken Blanchard along the lines of The 1 Minute Manager. Mm-hmm. Haven't finished that yet again. I think it's probably the second time I've read Raving Fans. But I think it's right now, it's a never ending stream of self help and business. Start With Why, Never Eat Alone. What was the other one? I have to get Simon Sinek also wrote Leaders Eat Last, which I have not ordered and I need to order. But I probably have, I would say, somewhere between 6 and 12 books sitting around that I have yet to finish or start. So a lot to do. And I'm trying to finish it. I've spent a lot of time trying to finish what was going to be the second edition of Functional Training for Sports. But now I think, because it's changed so much in the rewriting, is going to be called the New Functional Training for Sports. So that's also been occupying a decent amount of my time and energy. And I'm hopefully going to knock the remainder of that out by mid-September and start thinking about a photo shoot for that. And hopefully that'll be out in the spring.
I didn't put this in like the notes or anything to talk about, but I'm curious what your thoughts are. The new trailer for movie Concussion just came out yesterday, all about the concussion research that has been done over the last couple of years, and the NFL being presented with that. I think we may have talked about this in the past, but I just kind of was wondering what your thoughts and if you got to check that out at all.
I have not seen the trailer. I think, obviously, as a parent, it's really concerning. And having a son who's young and is thinking about football, I'm a former football player. My father was an All-American football player. Mm-hmm. But I am not going to encourage my son to play football. And I also think that they may be missing the boat in the NFL. I think there's a much greater connection between steroid use and this CTE than everybody wants to admit. Because one of the things that I do know is that there seems to be a lot of guys who are involved in these CTE cases and suicide and a lot of these things who also were rumored to be involved with steroids. And whether that means that the same guy who'd risk his health and other things through taking steroids is also the same guy that would risk his health in terms of playing with multiple concussions. Maybe they're the same guy. I don't know. But I think that's a piece of the puzzle that needs to be looked at a lot more closely.
Let's go into this question. I know this is we're a little bit biased in this too as well in terms of we're in the business of continuing education these days. But Brian Thomas wanted to know what resources you recommend for coaches out there who want to get more knowledge in the field of sports performance?
You know, that's a good question. As we said, I think we talked about the Perform Better Summit. We've talked about the CFSC. We've talked about a bunch of things kind of here as we went along. But I don't know. I mean, it's a little bit of a loaded question in the sense that I think there's so many mentorships and certifications and all kinds of stuff. It's probably too much so. I think if I would say anything, it's really try to figure out who the top people are and spend some time studying those top people. I don't know if I want to get into saying who is and who isn't or what is and what isn't, but I think spend time with real coaches. I think that's a big thing. People that actually coach athletes every day. Go someplace where athletes are actually working out every day, where you see them. And I think that's probably where you're going to learn the most. Because I think, again, there's a lot of kind of pretenders to the throne running around here who really aren't coaching a lot of people but are telling a lot of people how to coach.
As we wrap up, I was wondering if you have anything coming up in terms of events, seminars. Obviously, there's always new stuff going up on strengthcoach.com, the Strength Coach podcast, and Body by Boy Online, which we'll see the return of the staff meetings next week. But other than that, any events that you're ready to talk about?
Well, we've got our mentorship October 4th to 8th. So we've got, and we're only going to do, I think there's probably only going to be two, maybe three of those a year. Mm-hmm. So if people are interested in that, and that is that opportunity to kind of be immersed in the business and see the groups and be with the coaches, it's a pretty unique experience. So that's coming up that Monday through Thursday, probably the only one that we'll do in 2016. Just because we have so much other stuff going on. We're going to do a one day down at Perform Better's Functional Training Institute. I think December 6th is the date, although I'm not 100% sure, which they're billing as Functional Strength Coach 6, and we may be filming that and selling that. I think that we're going to do that. I haven't given that enough thought yet to really say, yeah, that's definitely what's going to happen, but there'll definitely be a really good one day seminar down there for, I think, a relatively small audience. I don't know how many people Chris can actually hold in that space, but yeah, those are probably the two biggies coming up besides the CFSC events, and they can go to that certified FSC website and look and see where those are coming up. I know we have one in September at our facility in Woburn, mm-hmm. and you probably actually have a better sense of where the next couple are, but I think those are also there. And I'm biased. I like the way we do things. I think we're leading the way in a lot of areas in terms of teaching people and coaching people how to coach and how to teach. So why would I not encourage them to come and spend time with us, right?
Yeah, I think we're really proud of what we built with all this stuff. And I've talked a lot about in the past of how how invested we all are in what we've been doing. So I really hope people go check that out. And it's all about just improving all the great coaches out there, helping everyone understand what we're doing at MBSC, why we do it, and how we implement all that stuff. So we do have some dates. Like Mike said, September 20th, we're going to be at MBSC. The 27th after that, we're going to be at Joe Sansalone's place down in Maryland. And then week after that, we'll be back at Drive 495 in New York City. And then in Halloween, we'll be spending it in Chicago. So that will be what we have coming up until October 31st. We can have some more dates out there down the road, but you can check all that stuff out. And so, you know, worst case, just subscribe to our newsletter at the bottom of the page there, because I only send out emails when we have new event dates, and that's it. You don't get any other stuff on there. No spam or anything like that. So with that being said, Mike, thank you so much for jumping on and talking about this stuff. I really enjoy this stuff because I think it's just totally a different environment than just talking in the facility and stuff like that. So thank you for taking the time, and definitely we'll be talking to you down the road.
All right. Thanks, Kev. I appreciate it.